Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
The campaign for president is over, but the onslaught of political and other news never ends. When we talked about trust in the media a couple of weeks ago, we heard from many of you that you're not sure how to discern opinion-driven information from straightforward news. We also heard that you're confused about the editorial standards newsrooms, digital, broadcast, and others employ as they decide what to report and how to present it. So today, a discussion about that with two guests, and I want to hear from you with a little bit of soul-searching mixed in. What are you specifically confused or upset about when it comes to news? Are you seeking out news sources that include a lot of opinion, but you're saying, hey, I just want the media to report the news? If you're under 30, how do you get most of your news? So I want you to talk to me this morning about confusion around news coverage, whether you find yourself being drawn to news sources that have a lot of opinion, and then you're saying, hey, I just want you to present the news, report the news. And if you're under 30, especially want to hear from you today about how you get your news. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Yes, please keep those selfies on I Voted coming too. I love them. I'm retweeting them. You can find me at Carrie NPR. Megan Frome is with us. She's an assistant professor at Colorado Mesa University and a director of the Journalism Education Association. And she's with us today from Grand Junction, Colorado. Megan, welcome. And I know you're in a swing state, so you've had the onslaught of political news in Colorado, too. It's good to have you.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Renee Hobbs is with us. She's a professor of communication studies and director of the Media Education Lab at the University of Rhode Island. And she's with us from Providence. Not a swing state, Renee, but I'm sure you've still been consuming a lot of news.
Looking forward to talking with you, Carrie. Nice to be here.
Yeah, good to have you, Renee. I want to dive, Renee and Megan, right into this credibility issue, because this kind of surprised me. This is what I learned from this last show that we did. News consumers are struggling to distinguish between what should be treated as credible and what deserves more skepticism. And Renee, to you first on this, are we in a media landscape where that makes it harder to figure out than ever?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are really challenged right now because, you know, some people think we're living in a kind of post-factual world where, you know, everybody has an army of truthful information that they can use to marshal a point of view. But these are not facts that we all agree on. So in a post-fact world, each side marshals a set of facts to support their own argument, and we actually can't even agree on what counts as information. That puts consumers and citizens in a big disadvantage. It also means that we can't so easily dismiss forms of propaganda that do actually contain accurate information. You know, that's one of the misunderstandings that many people have. They think, oh, propaganda, it's all full of lies.
Right.
Well,
right.
It turns out, even back in 1928, Eddie Bernays, the founder of the field of public relations, said, no, the best propaganda contains truths. Mm. Right? With a spin.
So, Megan, so given what Renee just said about the mixing and the difficulty in trying to figure out what is truly a fact, what kind of tip would you give to news consumers who are maybe going to sites where there's a lot of that mixed in, trying to discern the difference? What would you say?
You know, that's one of the toughest things, I think, especially for, you know, you mentioned that under 30 audience that
right.
You're really trying to target. They use so much social media, and their media habits point them to individual articles instead of often landing pages or home pages. And all of that sort of obscures things like who is the source? You know, what is the host institution for this information? And one of the best things I think that especially a young audience can do that's really mobile savvy is, you know, trace this information back to its source and part of the issue there is that it's more work. I mean, we're sort of just asking media consumers to not take things for face value, and that conflicts with 24 hours in a day and all these other things that are competing for our time. It's the only way to start, though, is to look at this information and say, where am I getting it? Is it from a friend who has already shared highly partisan information?
Good.
Or is it from a source that I have known in the past to be accurate? And so using some of that historical record of your own experience to sort of help you vet things is a wonderful place to start. And usually it will lead people to more trusted sources of news, really established news outlets. And those are the outlets that will tell you at the top of a story whether what you're reading is opinion. We've sort of lost the expectation that good journalism tells us when it's journalism and it tells us when it's opinion. And the best sources still adhere to that principle. So I think that's a great place to start.
Let's take some calls. We have a lot of people on the lines. To Stephen in Lakeville. Stephen, you're 19, is that right?
Yes.
How do you get your news?
I mainly get my news from a lot of online sources. I actually watch a few shows on YouTube, which goes through the daily news. And I've watched them since I was 16. And that's how I've kind of built up to know that these places are kind of credible, where they don't not only say hey, here's the news, but let me hear your opinion. And they actually try to bring it back to the audiences that they show. And then I look at, other news sources CNN, BBC, things like that, to try and keep myself not just having a singular news source, but have a variety, I guess.
And do you have a pretty good sense of what Megan and Renee just said, Stephen, about where the source and the agenda, of that news might be coming from? I mean, are you pretty good at figuring that out?
I feel like I am. I when I look at a news source, I know that certain news sources do lean towards a different agenda. And that's why I do try to keep a variety, to understand that, sure, everyone does kind of have an agenda nowadays with giving the news. So to broaden my horizons with how I get my news is kind of how I understand the agendas that are given to me with the daily news.
Great. Really good to have your call. Megan, does he have that right?
Oh, yeah. The idea, anytime I hear, somebody who's 19 say, I broaden the news that I get, the professor in me does this happy dance, because that's exactly what we want our students to be doing. When you consume only from one place all the time, you're sort of just asking for it. You don't get diversity. You also don't get this sort of litmus test of what all the other outlets are doing that can help balance out the perceptions that you're getting. So I love that.
Renee, when we were talking to Brian Stelter about, he had just done a media focus group of people talking about what they don't like about the media. And the thing that struck me was, don't give me opinion, just report the news. I don't want to hear, what the reporters think about this or the news anchors think about this. And yet, these are the same people that are spending hours, several hours a day, watching cable news, which is often analysis and opinion driven, which made me wonder, do people know the difference when they're watching it, for example, on cable news?
Well, I think it is worth wondering about whether people know the difference, but I also think it's worth thinking about, why are we watching to begin with? Because most of us consume the news as a part, not as a part of our entertainment experience, right? We watch the news to confirm the reality we think exists, or because we appreciate the conflict and controversy and drama mm-hmm. that is being depicted through news. So I think it's important. Another thing I like to say to news consumers is, be aware of your own motives for why you're using news, and reflect on when you're using news as a form of entertainment.
Well, okay.
I, for instance, think there's a lot to be gained from entertainment news programs, which
yeah.
we've now seen have had phenomenal impact on the marketplace, and actually do mix entertainment and information and propaganda in very skillful ways. These are highly entertaining forms for people, and I think reflecting on our own need for entertainment might help us make us better news consumers.
So when you say that, do you mean the news and entertainment, someone like John Oliver or The Daily Show or, some of the evening, the late night programs?
Even the conspiracy guys like Alex Jones.
Okay. Huh. You think there's value in someone like Alex Jones? Really? Renee, you think there's value in someone like Alex Jones?
Well, I think Alex Jones is entertaining, as witnessed by his YouTube counts. There is people enjoy conspiracies. Think about World Weekly News. Think about the hoax Snopes sites. People appreciate the ambiguity of when you don't know if it's true, it might be true or it's not true. I think in a way, partly why we're drawn to conspiracy news or why we find ourselves watching it is that the ambiguity, it might be true, it might be not true, actually makes it more interesting to us, because we have to fill in the gaps. We can't just rely on the expert. We have to figure out whether what he's saying is hogwash or whether there's something there.
Renee Hobbs with us, if you've just tuned in, from the University of Rhode Island, and Megan Frome with us from the Colorado Mesa University in Grand Junction, Colorado. And it's a conversation that follows that discussion we had a couple of weeks ago where we talked about trust in the media. And I learned some things during that conversation. I learned that news consumers often struggle to figure out what is actually factual. What's opinion driven? I thought it was kind of obvious. It apparently is not. I also learned about why some people are drawn to some specific news sources and whether they're bringing enough skepticism to that. I think what I learned is there isn't enough skepticism out there. So this morning, a discussion about that and asking you, particularly if you're under 30, how you get most of your news. Do you bring the kind of skepticism that we're talking about this morning? Which sources do you trust? Are you evaluating whether you're seeing accurate news? How much does that matter to you? Are you mixing in a lot of opinion-driven and analytical news? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter at Carrie NPR, to Mariah in Bird Island. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. So talk to me about how you think about this.
Well, two things. You know, the first thing is I'm 25, and I end up getting a lot of my news, at least for this election cycle, through the Snapchat news stories that they've been, you know, doing, which are really great. They seem to be pretty unbiased for the most part, and they kind of show all sides. And then my second thing is that as a journalism student, I do a lot of research anyway, but I find that I'm doing more research on who is funding these news outlets and who's paying them and what their opinions are versus what the news outlets are actually telling me.
Yeah, that's really good. So what led you, just because you're studying journalism, led you to start to do some digging about who's behind some of these news sources?
Well, I've always kind of had an inquisitive mind, but yes, definitely with journalism. I'm in my senior year, and, you know, the research is a huge aspect of whether we can trust where we're getting our information from or not.
Well, I wish you well in the pursuit of journalism, Mariah. I love it. It's a good career to be going into. Megan, Snapchat. Do you hear about this from your students? And what would you say about that as a source of news?
Yeah, I do hear about it from my students, and I sort of have mixed emotions. You know, the first response is anytime I can get students to engage with news is a small victory, and sometimes it's a great victory. It's an even better victory when they do exactly what she was describing, which is go beyond that, and I think the funding issue is so essential. And what I also think, you know, I love that she was a journalism student, because one of the things that I like to remind my students is that if you don't know how journalism is supposed to operate, you don't know what standards to be applying. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in order for us to first say this Snapchat or, you know, this Instagram post is accurate and it's a public service and it's newsworthy, we have to know what that means. And that starts with, you know, not only educating students to be these active consumers, but also these really critical, aware consumers who know what good news is supposed to look like, so that we have a metric for comparison.
Megan, I want to give listeners here just a couple little tells for, and this isn't really necessarily about political news, but it probably also applies. When you hear a news organization or read a news organization saying, we're seeking confirmation, we're getting reports, what should that alert you to? Because you see that a lot.
Yes. You know, that should just tell you that they're still knee-deep in the process, and likely it's the structure of that news product, for example, 24-hour news, that's allowing them to sort of tell you that, and you should take what you hear or you see with a grain of salt. You know, really, I love 24-hour news because it can tell you those things, but that moment, you know, that really quick 5-second soundbite that says we're still working on this gets lost in the shuffle.
It does.
And yeah, and so I think that, you know, for anybody who hears that, it should absolutely tell them, you know, take a step back, take a deep breath, go do something else for a little while, and let journalism play out. Let these reporters do their job. And when we stop demanding that they have the answer exactly that moment, we can kind of give them some breathing room to do that.
A call here from Andrea in Minneapolis. Hi, Andrea.
Hi.
Hey.
I feel like you're speaking to me directly.
Okay.
I have a 15-year-old who gets his news, his political news from John Oliver,
okay.
You know, humorist.
Not and, a bad place to get it. I mean, John Oliver's well-informed. I watch the show, too.
I don't know what he's seeing. Maybe I should start there.
You should.
I'm trying to help him find balance. You know, he's a smart kid. I think, you know, hey, read the paper. You know, maybe focus on this for a while. But then there's a part of me that understands that no matter what, there's a bias. And, you know, you might have, you know, some real meat in the opinion pages, but I kind of just want them to stay away from that and just stick with the report.
I think this is a really good question, Andrea. So Renee, take on the value of people like John Oliver and The Daily Show, and then what Andrea says about wishing her son would go back to some more traditional sources of news.
Right. So this is always the tension, isn't it? It's the broccoli or the, you know, the birthday cake.
Exactly.
Right? It's good for you to read the New York Times, but it's fun to eat the birthday cake or to watch entertaining news. And I feel like in some ways we live in an entertainment culture. So I feel like it's okay to not feel guilty about using entertainment news, and especially if entertainment news helps cultivate your intellectual curiosity.
Excellent.
So I would urge you to have your son watch John Oliver and then generate what are 3 or 4 questions that got raised in that show that you would like to learn more about. And then use good search and find strategies in traditional journalism to sort of deepen your understanding. But I think reflecting on your needs for entertainment and using entertainment to cultivate intellectual curiosity is a good thing for young news consumers.
I love the way you put that, Renee. And I want to say, do you remember when there used to be a lot of hand-wringing about, oh, the millennials are watching Jon Stewart and that's the only, and Stephen Colbert, and that's the only place they get their news? The thing that we need to understand about that is a lot of the people that watch Stewart and Colbert and John Oliver have an awareness of the news, or they wouldn't get a lot of the social critique that goes on
exactly.
in that show, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be funny if you didn't
right.
understand the real context behind it.
Exactly. Shaley says on Twitter, I really trust NPR News and NPR for my healthy news. I get my snacky news from Full Frontal Sam B and Jezebel and Confirm elsewhere. She's got a great mm-hmm. media diet there. So the phone's
yep.
to Chad in Minneapolis. Hi, Chad. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, how's it going?
Going well. How about you?
It's going well. And I love the conversation. And the reason why I called in is because I'm a business owner.
Yeah.
And I love the news. I feel like we're in the golden age. For me, I actually depend on it.
Okay.
To know what's going on with technology, so I have to check it. But the one thing I go to is podcasts.
Aha.
Coming to you guys, of course. You know, this day and age, I went to the U of M for journalism. I kind of went rogue and went the entrepreneur route. But with all the things out there, you have to be skeptical of everything.
Uh-huh.
And you have to challenge it. And, you know, having healthy conversations and intellectual conversations with one another is great, but you also have to challenge your sources of where they're coming from. Online, there's so much out there.
Right.
And for me, I guess at the core of the business is if you see a news article that might be fake or an Apple leak or something like that, you're like, okay, where's this actually coming from? Does this really matter? Do I really need to know about this for my business? And then that has kind of bled over into my personal life of where's this source coming from? Is this a conspiracy theory guy, or what is his credibility? What's their track record?
It's good. You sound very well informed. Do you think that was because of your journalism background in college, or just what curiosity has led you into this?
You know what? The number one thing I tell to all my friends and other entrepreneurs is curiosity with anything.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be curious about. That's why podcasts are great. 99% Invisible is great because it throws you into something, and you can learn about something and walk away like, wow, I had no idea how a network effect worked or how someone made a sink. And another thing about news is even someone had mentioned, another caller had mentioned YouTube.
Right.
You know, even doing fixing my own sink, I can go to YouTube, learn how to fix a sink. Now, that's not necessarily news, but it's curiosity. It's learning, and I'm checking my sources now. Who's the best plumber out there? Who should I listen to?
That's good.
That curiosity, I just encourage, and it does stem from, I think, just being curious.
Glad you heard the show. Yeah.
Carrie, Chad's bringing up a really cool point that, in a way, what we have is changing social norms about who's an authority,
mm-hmm.
right? In the old news, it was an authority was a guy from Washington with a title, right? And you indicated that right. with a comma and a quote and a direct quotation, and voila, you had an authority.
Right.
But today we live in a world where peers and personal relationships are new forms of authority. And the best person to learn about Indian cuisine is probably that lady who's making the YouTube videos,
uh-huh.
not necessarily an expert. And it sometimes is the case that experts have this problem called the curse of knowledge, which is we know too much to explain it to people who aren't experts. So sometimes the best way to learn something is to find a near peer who knows a little bit more than you, but isn't so expert that they forgot what it was like to not know about things like whatever, you know, exchange rates or the interest rates or
a near
peer. You know, all the technical topics that sometimes journalists forget what ordinary people don't know.
So a near peer, Renee, somebody who isn't necessarily writing books on the topic or just somebody who's in that field, or I'm trying to figure out what you mean by that.
Yep, they know a little bit more than you. So one of the reasons why blogs and podcasts are rising in their popularity as news sources is that podcast guy who does the latest technology for marketing your small business, he's not an expert on that topic, but he knows more than you do, right? And he's on a journey, and he's kind of talking about here's what he's been learning as he goes along. So that idea of the changing norms for what counts as an authority are definitely changing how we think about journalism, and it's actually kind of forcing journalists to go outside the usual suspects for who they traditionally go to for expertise.
Renee and Megan, this was great. Thank you, and I don't think we spent enough time on it, so I want to continue. We're hearing from a lot of young news consumers who, I have to say, bring more skepticism to this than I expected. So that's a good thing. Let's keep the conversation going, can we?
Wonderful.
Such a pleasure. Thanks
good.
So much, Carrie. Bye-bye.
Good. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks very much. And on Twitter, by the way, loving and retweeting these photos that you're sending me, these selfies of your I voted sticker or you in line. Keep it coming. Tweet me at @CarrieMPR with a photo and a sticker, and then #TellMPR.